On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 14 years ago, Cesar Millan crawled across the border from Mexico with nothing but the clothes on his back and a childhood spent among animals, and especially dogs, on a Mexican farm. Today, Cesar Millan is an American media phenom, dog trainer to the stars, Oprah Winfrey, Scarlett Johansson, Nicolas Cage, Hilary Duff, and star himself of the National Geographic cable TV hit, The Dog Whisperer. You and your dog have problems? Cesar Millan has answers, honed at his Dog Psychology Center in L.A. It's all about who's boss in the pack, he says. Not all dog people agree, but Millan is riding high. It's really, he says, about training people. Joining me now from Culver City, California, is Cesar Millan. He is star of the hit National Geographic Channel cable TV show Dog Whisperer and author of the new book Cesar's Way. He also runs the 2-acre Dog Psychology Center in South Central Los Angeles, where he rehabilitates dogs and helps train people. Cesar Millan, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to be with you. And an honor. Thank you.
What's your philosophy? How's it work?
The philosophy is very simple. It's about exercise, discipline, then affection, not just affection.
And dominance theory, human in charge.
Human in charge. Well, we are a pack-oriented species, right? And our parents should be the pack leader, and the kids should follow the directions of pack leader. But we are the only species that follow unstable pack leaders around the world. So animals don't follow instability. So leadership in the animal world has nothing to do with frustration or anger. A lot of people misunderstand dominance with being frustrated or angry.
So you're not saying beating up on the dog, but you do want the dog to know who's the boss. I've seen your assessment of the nation's dogs, American dogs, described as overfed, under-exercised, out of touch with their instincts, and neurotic in their personal relationships. Does that catch it? Do we have dogs out of whack in this country, in your view?
Unstable. Yes, unstable, even though we love them very much. They're unstable. And so the reason why they're unstable is not because they don't get the best food in the world or they get birthday parties. You know, in America, dogs have birthday parties. Mm. But these dogs are my clients. So what happens is they don't get enough exercise and rules, boundaries, limitations on a daily basis, which that allows them to be balanced.
In your show, Dog Whisperer, it's kind of like the nanny show. I mean, you go into houses where people are having a lot of trouble with their dogs, mm-hmm. and in what seems like a nanosecond, I don't know if that's the miracle of television editing or the mm-hmm. way you really do it, the dogs are under control. What kind of problems do people bring to you, and how do you give us some examples of how you respond?
Well, the problems are all the way from loss of esteem or timid or insecure dog or fearful dog or panicky dog, you know, to where most of the people fear, which is aggression. And that's really my expertise, you know, working with red zone dogs. That's how I became known, by the person who can put 2-3 pit bulls, 4 pit bulls, or 30 pit bulls in one place without killing each other.
Let's take a little example here. Here's a bit from a recent show where you visit the home of Christine and Farrell Burton. They're having problems with their 3-year-old dog, Bikini.
I go every week with my dogs to the Paws for Reading program at the library. The dogs sit on the little kids' laps, they look up, and the kids read to them. She is so good in all these volunteer things that she does, but when she comes across a big dog,
Bikini just starts growling and lunging toward the dog. If she's not confined or not held, which takes a lot of strength, then we got a dog fight.
Okay, Cesar Millan, here's Exhibit A, a little dog that goes after every dog that walks by. Give us an example of the kind of advice you gave this couple on how to get a grip on their little beast.
Well, see, most of the people begin the relationship with affection first. And so in the animal world, if you give affection first, they're going to see you as a soft energy. And in soft energy, they don't follow soft energy. So they're going to take a position within the pack. So some dogs can be absolutely wonderful and fantastic and submissive with humans. But when they go into the dog world, they become dominant. And so a lot of times what people do is they put tension on the leash. And so this dominance is now fed by tension. So tension and dominance together can trigger an aggression.
That is, the owner is communicating tension to the dog, which cranks up the dog's aggression toward other dogs coming by.
It makes the dog escalate the state of mind instead of redirect or block, you know, this, the unwanted state of mind. So that's in the show, I always teach people to be calm, assertive about situation, regardless what the state of mind is in. Really, the only energy they're going to become balanced from is when we manage to stay calm and assertive.
So I
most of the people become, oh my God, hold on, beginning now. And so this energy, instead of calming the dog down or calming in situation, it only increases the, you know, unwanted behavior.
So here's a dog, a little dog, that goes after any dog that goes by, no matter what the size. I saw some of this, but I wish you'd describe it. How did you work with the owners, you know, as precisely as you can? What were the steps that you took? Part of it's being calm, but you actually worked with them, walking by other dogs back and forth and advised them and showed them how to do it. What's the way? What did you show them?
Well, first of all, to identify the energy they're projecting, a lot of people are not conscious of their nervousness or the tension. They feel that they're pulling the right way or they're being assertive and all that. So a lot of times it's just a matter of being acknowledging who you're being at that moment, you know, which a lot of people, you know, disregard that part.
Who am I right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who am I as an energy at that moment, not who you are as name, because they don't really care. and really not to focus on the name, because a lot of people try to redirect the state of mind through the name, like, beginning, no.
Shouting the dog's name doesn't do it.
Yeah, at that time is the worst thing to do, because what you're saying is you're using the name when the mind is aggressive. See, they don't rationalize. Mm-hmm. So you can't try to rationalize a behavior with animal because they don't have the capability. So you want to focus on the animal. The one who's unstable is the animal, is not the name. And that's what people need to learn to differentiate, you know,
I've got my aggressive little pup on the leash. I'm calm, I'm cool, I'm collected. We're about to walk past, you know, some big dog coming the other way. I'm not shouting out the dog's name. I'm not communicating tension. And still my dog begins to go after this dog coming by. What do you say?
And then you have to learn to correct properly, and your timing have to be precise, you know. In the animal world, really, force is not the best element. It's the element of surprise. They allow you to control the mind. So really, your timing, because 1 second means a lot in the animal world. They don't
think about it.
When you
say surprise, you mean delivering a kind of discipline down that line if they don't do what you want.
The discipline comes from energy or body touch. You know, dogs do touch each other. They bite each other. So their timing is precise and the intensity is precise.
Are you smacking the dog then somehow? Are you hitting it?
Well, smacking becomes more from a frustrated or angry state of mind. So it's really a touch. It's a touch that lets the brain know that you disagree with the behavior and he must follow the rules. The rules is you don't growl or bark or lunge to another dog. That is the conversation in your mind.
Touch is a very broad word. What do you mean by are you poking,
in the show I teach people how to pull the leash the right way, because the leash becomes a source of connection with animal. It's become like an extension of your arm, right? So you have to learn to pull the leash in a certain way where you create an out of balance experience. Most of the people create a tense experience through the leash, so the leash is not going to be an asset for what you're trying to accomplish. Sometimes I use my feet. I use my feet to touch in the middle of the leg and between the ribs, right in the middle. Just like picture a horse, you know, when people ride a horse, they touch certain part of the body with their feet. And the reason why they touched, see, that's a touch. Mm-hmm. You're not kicking the horse. You're touching the horse so you can accomplish a behavior, right? And then create what you want. So if the horse is keen on the left and you want him to key on the right, and then you touch and you snap him out of it from keen on the left. So in the dog world, it's the same thing. So that's one touch. And another touch is when my hand becomes a mouth and my finger teeth the teeth. That touch most of the time is going to be on the neck, because I'm mimicking what the mother would do to a dog or what an alpha dog would do to another
dog.
Sort
of biting the dog's neck with your fingers.
I'm biting, yeah. Yeah, because they bite each other. So if your touch is more with the intention of biting to redirect the behavior, that's what it becomes reality.
And is that is it like a hard pinch? Is the dog in pain from that
finger bite? Well, you have
to
match. When you use physical touch, you don't want to use it when the mind is way too intense. Because it means nothing to them. They can take pain like nobody else, you know. So you want to use physical touch when the mind is in a mild state of aggression or almost getting into that state. That's what you have to learn. Your timing have to be very, very good so you don't use a lot of physical touch. And I don't use, you know, a lot of physical touch because my time is precise. It's more like a touch on the neck, but not so much like pushing the neck. You know, I'm not, my intention is not to hurt him. My intention is to snap him out of it. It's just like when people panic, you slap them in the face. It's not to hurt them. It's just to snap them out of it.
It's simple in a way, and also immensely complicated, not least, Cesar Millan, the way that here you are 14 years after coming to this country, book, TV show, all built on dogs. We really want to, it must be amazing to you sometimes what's happened with this career.
Well, you know, I knew what I wanted. I really came to America with the purpose in mind, and I wanted to be the best dog trainer in the world. I did not accomplish that position, but you know, I'm becoming somebody that it can bring, you know, a choice. It can bring, you know, a possible, you know, your dog can change state of mind. Not change, but transform state of mind. It's a possibility.
Sarah's calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, Sarah. You're on the air.
Hey there.
Hi.
Do we have issues?
What do you got?
We have a 4-year-old female boxer, and she's wonderful in the house. She was the star of her obedience class. We've worked with her. I've trained many, many dogs and never had this issue. Her prey drive is so strong that if we are outside and there is something moving, she is going.
Her prey drive, that is to jump on the prey.
Well, to follow it mm-hmm. in a fast manner, that's for
you mean,
sure.
So she's in the house, something's moving outside, and what happens?
If it's moving, she's going for it. And when she's on lead, it's nearly impossible if it's moving and she's fixed on it to get her attention at that time. If I can anticipate it, I will try to get her attention as best I can before and redirect her, but it's next to being impossible.
Sarah, what's your boxer's name?
Josephine.
Josephine. All right. Cesar Millan, here we've got Josephine, 4-year-old female boxer. If it moves, she's on it. Sarah doesn't know how to stop her. What do you say?
Well, this is, you know, some of those, that's part of my expertise. And in order for me to help people in her situation, I evaluate the human, as you know, and, mm-hmm. and then I give the strategy that I follow myself or that I will follow and her dog to stop or redirect the unwanted behavior, which is hunting. The dog is hunting, and that's, you know, domesticated doesn't mean they're not going to hunt. That's why we have to have control over our powerful breeds. You know, like boxers, Bouzerons, and German Shepherds, you know, all the powerful guys, mm-hmm. you know, that really require a human who has a very basic, you know, common sense. And that's really what I teach people, just to have common sense so that the energy can intensify. Because you can be graduated from Harvard, doesn't mean you can walk a dog. You know, so the animals don't really care about how intelligent you are. They care about how much common sense you have. So we just have to intensify common sense and the human. And in order for us to do it, we have to be there. You know, unfortunately, what I do is not a psychic thing. It's really hands-on.
But what would look for if you've got Josephine the boxer who's lunging for things? What's your sort of checklist of issues that come to mind for you, Cesar Millan?
Well, see, in situations like that, what I do is I create the scenario so I am in control of the behavior before I put myself in an environment that I'm not in control. At this point, we have to really create the scenario. That means we have to bring cats, we have to bring whatever the dog, you know, gets fixated on or key on, and then control, you know, after, you know, I meet the dog, of course.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, we have to, you know. We have to put in ourselves as we're going to control the situation, you know, otherwise the dog fails. So if the dog fails, it's because we didn't create the situation the right way for the dog.
Sarah, what's your sense of why you're not in control with this pup?
Well, I'm listening to this common sense theory.
And your dog doesn't seem to have it, but maybe. But what?
No,
do you
the
mean?
Dog has the common sense.
No. What I've heard is that the dog has it and I don't.
Does it ring true?
Is it true?
Does it ring true, I say?
Well, if you ask my other dogs, they wouldn't agree. I think that what I'm asking for mm-hmm. is how would one access someone to help with this situation?
And I guess also, Cesar, she's got mm-hmm. other dogs without this problem. Why suddenly with one dog?
Well, there's 4 levels of energy: low, medium, high, and very high. You know, most of the time people can control low, medium with very little common sense. But when you have a high or very high level energy dog, your common sense have to be at that same level.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they know that your energy is not as powerful as their energy. So it goes back to energy.
Of course,
and so common sense gives you access to that world.
And energy.
The more you are around high level energy, the more mm-hmm. you develop that. That's why some people can't control certain dogs, even though they were successful with other dogs. And regardless of the breed, you know, it's not so much the breed, it's more the energy they're born with.
And in all the situations I see you looking at, exercise is huge. Talk about energy. You want these dogs really run and worked every day as a way of calming down some of that energy.
Well, it's really hard for a high-level energy dog or very high-level energy dog to live in civilized world because civilized is boring, you know, for a high-level energy dog or very high. They were meant to work for hours, you know, and civilized world don't have that kind of, you know, structure for them or that kind of job. You know, that's why those type of dogs should go to law enforcement or drug dogs
right.
or bomb dogs.
Right.
You know, something where the energy can be used for more than 4 hours. Really, I mean, they can actually take that much of a time for them to feel that they did something with their life. Low-level energy dogs, mm-hmm. medium-level energy dogs, 30, 45 minutes, they're happy with it.
But some need
That's
more.
Why.
Sarah's looking for how to get advice here. Do you think she'll get the sort of Cesar Millan way from most any dog trainer she goes to, or is this an unusual?
Everybody has their own approach. You know, that's one thing that is the beauty of America. That everybody can create their own approach, and whatever works for them, of course, you know, is what it works for them. The goal, you know, should be equal for everybody else, is to accomplish calm submissive state, you know, and human to become calm and assertive state. And that's how you create a pack, you know, when the human is that authority figure and the dog becomes the follower figure, then you are in absolutely control. So the only way you can actually block instincts is when you are truly pack leader. And that's the only one who can overrule unwanted, you know, reactions. That's the only one. You know, a dog friend, a dog trainer, you know, a dog, whoever, you know, whatever title you want to call yourself, if you're not pack leader, that's what is going to matter.
Sarah, lots of exercise, be the boss, and good luck to you there.
I really hope, you know, you get some professional that they have the expertise to work with that kind of state of mind. It's a lot of great people up there. I mean, and that's one of the things that we're doing. We bring in more of the awareness so people can seek for professional help. We always say, don't try to do this without a professional help.
Right. Bill's calling from East Hampton, Massachusetts. Hi, Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Cesar.
Hi.
How are you, Tom?
I have two dogs, a Belgian Shepherd and an Australian Shepherd. And the problem is probably not too different than you've already heard. My dogs go after other dogs. They're wonderful around people. There's no threat of ever biting. They're very friendly. They're very calm, but other dogs. And I think they got it from being in my backyard. When I'm not home, I would put them out in the backyard. The other dogs are walked by the front of the house. They would bark at them. I never thought too much of it. It didn't seem to be too big a deal until I started taking them, walking them on leashes, and seeing them start lunge at other dogs. And the big problem is I can control them on the leash. I correct them immediately, sharply pull them back, sit them down, grab them by the neck, say no. But I'd love to take them hiking, but I can't trust them off leash, and I really can't hike with them on leash, especially coming downhill if somebody's coming up with a dog. I can't have them on the leash, and they'll pull me right down the mountain. I can't trust them.
So what to do on the leash and off Cesar Millan? What's your advice?
Well, you know, let me ask you one thing.
Sure.
When you are telling the dog sit down and lay down and all this, you know, dog training stuff, the dogs, do they keep looking at the target even though they're sitting down?
They are. If there's no target,
no.
When
there is a target, there is no target. There's nothing to do.
Oh no! There's a target. If there's another dog. If they're off leash, I'm lost because.
No, I know, but this is with the leash. I'm talking with the leash. You first master the leash.
I can sit them down, but their eyes are on that target.
That's right. That means the body is the only one who's listening to you, but not the mind. So before you actually allow a dog to be off leash, you have to have absolutely control on the leash. This is where you condition. Yes, but that's why we need professionals, you know, for them to teach you. Look, the mind is not listening to you, even though the butt is in the floor. The mind is over there. So the most important thing to learn is where the mind is, and how can you make the mind come to you?
Bring the mind to you. Cesar Millan, I want to ask you about that. I mean, I grew up with a lot of dogs.
Yeah.
We didn't really have this kind of problem in general. Maybe we were just lucky, but we didn't think we needed professional help to have a dog. So what's going on? Why suddenly this idea of professionalizing this relationship of humans and dogs? Have Americans forgotten something here? Or
no, because we're becoming more and more intellectual. See, the more intellectual you become, the less you're going to control animal. Because, you know, they don't follow an intellectual pack leader. They just follow a common sense pack leader. So what we need to go back to is just common sense. How can we become calm and sort of energy? How important it is to walk a dog every day? You know, as you heard your listener mm-hmm. earlier, he thought the behavior was normal, and then one day he made a decision to walk with the dog. Mm-hmm. You know, so, and then he realized how bad the problem was. So he allowed this behavior to intensify for a while instead of nip it in the bud when he saw it for the first day. So a lot of times what happens is people don't do anything when there is a low behavior. They do things when there is a bad behavior. And so we can prevent all this aggression, all this, you know, territorial dominant behavior if we are consistent with exercise, discipline, affection from the first day we get our dog. See, we can't stop exercising and disciplining our dog, you know, or just leave it for the weekend. You know, that's what a lot of people do. They just don't walk a dog every day.
I can't help but hear a kind of critique of American culture. Here you come across from Mexico, from a very close relationship with animals. You look out on the way this country interacts with its dogs. And in your observations about it, it almost sounds as though you're, you know, poking a little bit of fun, or there's a kind of critique of the way Americans live, the way Americans interact even among each other here.
I am encouraging America to accomplish balance, you know. I'm a total believer that you can accomplish balance through animal. Again, we are the only species that follow unstable pack leaders around the world. Animals don't do that.
You're saying following what? Unstable?
Unstable pack leaders around the world.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that?
Oh, we follow unstable energy. Animals don't follow unstable energy. So they don't care who you are and what race you are and what name you have and, you know, and what profession do you have. What mm-hmm. they care, who you are in the animal world is energy and activities. That's who you are.
And humans follow unstable leaders.
Unstable pack leaders. Like
what? Like name some, either now or in history.
Just look around. Just look in every country in the world. We have nothing but unstable pack leaders. That's what we are, you know, the world is the way it is because we don't have a calm, assertive pack leader. We have an aggressive pack leader. We have a, you know, too dominant pack leader, too territorial. Dominance is good, but not too dominant.
And there goes the world. Donald's calling from New York, New York. Hi, Donald. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Caesar. My problem is I have a 19-month-old female English bulldog. She's extremely well-socialized. She loves people. She loves other dogs. I take her and exercise her every morning for 45 minutes to an hour.
Okay.
She's very fast. She's very agile. The problem is this morning and other mornings, there's another dog at the dog run where we leave her off-leash, and it's the off-leash aggression, and it's the other dog that shows its teeth and growls, and my dog goes at her like a heat-seeking missile. And it's, I don't know what to do. I grab her collar. It's almost dangerous for the owners to stick their hands in there.
That's right.
So here we are off the leash and with problems. What mm-hmm. about that situation, Cesar? You can't communicate through the leash now. Dog's off. What do you do?
Yeah, that's what you have to choose your friends. That's what you have to choose what dogs your dog is going to play with. Yeah, at the dog park or places like that, not all dogs are under control, even though they seem happy-go-lucky. But, you know, a lot of these guys come from without walking. You know, they just go from the house to the dog park. And so a dog park, you know, every 3 hours you're going to see a dog fight. So dog park is like Chuck E. Cheese, you know, excitement. And that excitement can create a fight. That's why, you know, in the show I bring dogs into my pack because my pack, I have absolutely control over. I know exactly the energy that I have to bring before I bring a dog that I don't have bond with.
But when we go to the dog park, we don't have that choice. I mean, whoever's there is who's there.
That's why I'm encouraging people to walk the dogs before they bring the dog to the dog park. You know, if first practice... The dog have to see it this way. Follow me, then I take you to the dog park. Not just follow me into the car, and then I take you to the dog park.
So Donald may do that, but the others may not. So he shows up. He's got other dogs on high energy. Does he whisper to those dogs and command? Can he extend his authority to the other guy's dog?
But you're gonna have a big problem if you do that.
Yeah.
Dog park is just crazy. I mean, everybody is entitled of whatever thing, and you know. So if the person arrived there first, he owns the dog park as far as they're concerned. So, And they're always going to blame bulldogs. They're always going to blame Rottweilers and pit bulls and German shepherds, even though their, you know, Labradoodle is showing the teeth. You know, they're not going to see their dogs as a bad dog or as a dog who is creating a fight. They're going to see the bulldog, the Rottweiler, the German shepherd. You know, that's the bad part of it. They unfortunately think that dogs are carrying at this point, and that's one of the things that I do seminars to encourage people not see that it's the breed who's making the problem, it's the human who doesn't keep a dog balanced.
Donald, do you think you're going to have luck requiring the other dog park visitors to run their dogs for an hour before they show up?
I don't think so. It's New York City, and you don't have much control over anybody. But the interesting thing is she's really good with all other dogs, exceptional, and it's just some personalities of the dogs just set her off, one in particular, and it's
just like humans.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
You stay away from them.
that's not much solace. Donald, good luck. Laura's calling from Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. Hi, Laura. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Caesar. I'm a big fan, and I wanted to let you know that I adopted a pit bull terrier about 2 weeks ago. He's a pit bull terrier mix, and it has been an amazing experience. I've had dogs all my life, and you, Caesar, would be appalled at how I've treated them because I've done nothing but spoil them and give them tons of affection. But with this guy, I knew he's definitely more of a challenge, and one of the first things I discovered in the first couple of days is that even on leash, he would leap at and try to nip joggers, people running by.
Great.
And yeah, exactly, which is not a fun experience as an owner, especially when you've got a dog that's part pit, you know, because he's much more. So basically, I kept Caesar in mind, and I kept being calm, assertive with him, and I took him out. And I think one of the main things that I would have done before is I would have avoided every runner in creation, and that would have been the biggest mistake I could have made. But I've been watching the show a lot, and instead I've been exposing him, and it's only been, it's been about, like I said, a week and a half. And last night I took him down to Jamaica Pond, which is a mile and a half loop here in Jamaica Plain, with legions of runners going by in every direction. And it was an amazing experience.
It's working
oh, my God, it's been incredible. And I'm such a believer. And I would just like to say to other listeners, if you think you can't do it, give it a try. Just give it a try. Because when you see the results, it's so easy to put the affection aside and essentially not be selfish. You know, now when I want to play with the dogs and rub their bellies and kiss their heads, instead it's like, no, I'm going to put a leash on you and take you for a walk because I know that's what you really need.
Laura, thanks for calling. Patty is calling from Tampa, Florida for Caesar Milan. Hi, Patty. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Caesar. How you doing?
Doing great, Patty.
I wanted to call to say that I grew up around horses and dogs and never treated a dog the same way I would treat my horse. And until I started watching you, I realized that I was missing the point of dealing with my dogs on that level. And now that I've been dealing with my dogs, my four dogs, as I would a horse, I've found that it's just so much easier. It's just, like you said, common sense. You wouldn't run up to a horse screaming and yelling and waving your arms, but people do it to dogs every day, you know? And
exactly.
I'm trying to explain to friends and to colleagues exactly how it works, and it just blows their mind that they can't just jump on a dog and slather it with love and affection and, you know, expect it to act normal.
Patty, we've got...
You do love the horse, but that's what you do after he works for you, don't you?
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't run up to my horse in the field. I wouldn't run up to someone standing with their horse, you know.
Yeah.
You have to be calm and assertive and walk up to the animal and take control.
Let me ask you both, Patty. You've watched and you're a fan, and Caesar, you're here. I mean, we've got dog veterinary behaviorists who really don't like this, who have described your techniques as dragging human relationships with dogs back to the Dark Ages, as kind of a based on cruelty, drowning animals in their own fear. Patty, first to you, do you see that?
Not at all, but I see where they're coming from. I actually got into an argument with a Humane Society worker at a party on 4th of July. I know that's terrible, but she kept using the word discipline as a verb, and I'm like, this is your problem. You're not seeing a discipline, a regimen, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
The exercise.
Mm-hmm. Kind of steady, tough relationship.
Mm-hmm. Not tough. It's just a structure.
Right. They think that when you say discipline and dominance and being the leader, that you're kicking your dog around and bossing them around, when in reality you're just taking hold of them going, hey, I'm in control. I'm the boss. This is the way people should act with dogs, the way people should act with children.
Patty, thanks for your call. Caesar, what about this criticism? This dog whisperer guy is turning everything into a kind of dictatorial state with our American dogs.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, you know, you're going to have people who loves you, and that's just part of life, and you're going to have people who disagree with you. And, you know, I admire Oprah, and not everybody loves Oprah. You know, I admire Dr. Phil, not everybody loves Dr. Phil. I admire Anthony Robbins, not everybody. So, you know, it's just part of the law, nothing new about it, you know. I know that I can walk 40, 50 dogs at the same time, no leash, and, you know, these people don't have that capability. So I'm coming from a different point of view. Is I'm not training the dog. I'm training the human. I'm rehabilitating the dog. I'm working with dogs who are in a red zone. I'm working with dogs who everybody else already give up on them, and the dog has an appointment to die. Those are the guys that I'm working with. Now, it would be wonderful, you know, that these people have their own television show and they teach us, you know, because I'm willing. I'm open-minded human being. I want to learn from everybody. I mean, I have not closed my mind to learn. And obviously, these people don't see it as a learning experience. They just see it their way is the only way, and their way is a better way. And it's a very close-minded argument, you know. So, you know, it's four things you can do: fight, flight, avoidance, or surrendering, which I choose to ignore.
Describe to us how you came to this view of things, your upbringing in Mexico that brought you to your understanding of dogs.
Well, you know, I was raised by my grandfather and my dad, and they both always say, never work against Mother Nature, never work against Mother Nature. They never break it down. In a farm, they don't break it down for you, you know, like the way I break it down for people in my seminars or in my show or, mm-hmm. or in the book or whatever. So I learned to break it down, you know. That's one of the things that I appreciate America, because America do break things down. You know, it's just an explanation for everything, which is wonderful. Third world countries really don't have an explanation. They just tell you this is the way it is. You know, if you don't like it, oh, well, you know. But America has a break it down system, which I adopt. You know, I adopt for the benefit of my kids, for the benefit of my wife, for the benefit of, you know, whoever wants to listen to me and learn. And so they understand where I'm coming from, you know. And so I have learned so much from American people. It's just amazing, you know. Again, I mentioned Anthony Robbins and Deepak Chopra and Dr. Dwayne Wire and Oprah and, you know, my good friend of mine, Jada Pinkett Smith. And I have learned so much from people that already accomplish a position and they use common sense. So I just embrace that part. And I make my own approach, my own words, my own formula. And I just want to share, you know. If it doesn't work for people, I'm okay with it. It's just I want people to know that it's choices in life, and I'm one of those choices. I'm not the only choice. I'm one of those choices.
You've described coming across the border, you know, the $100 to the coyote who helped you across, you know, in mud and water in a sort of mud hole up to your chest, and making that dash through the junkyard across a freeway. Yeah. Into America. How did you get from there to the company of Oprah and Jada Plinkett Smith and Vin Diesel and Hilary Duff and all the rest? How'd you pop up?
Well, you know, my dad and my grandfather were incredibly influenced to me in instincts. My mom was very influenced in spirituality and believing and having the faith and dreaming big. So I'm a combination of two very powerful sources of information and belief. You know, they both believe in me. And it's very important to know that we parents feel the same way to our children, because we can trigger the future in our children. And so that's where I'm from. That's where I'm coming from, you know. Dream big. So I dream big, you know. I was told to dream big. And I was told to be honest, to have integrity, to be loyal, which is, you know, one of dogs' most incredible things that they can share. They're honest, they have integrity, and they're loyal. So it's a lot of things that I follow that is close to Mother Nature and very close to God. And it creates a ripple effect, you know. It creates a ripple effect. There's no two ways about it. That's my belief.
We've got a lot more callers who want to talk to you, but I just have to ask you about immigration. Has been such a huge issue, raging lately, and hundreds of thousands of people in the streets, and lots of support, but also lots of American criticism of people who came to the country just the way you did. How do you look at that raging debate in the United States?
Well, this is nothing new. You know, they did to the Italians, they did to the African Americans. I mean, this behavior of, you know, banning certain race or this disagreeing with certain behavior has been happening for a long time. So obviously, it's a group of people who want to monopolize how things will go in the world. And
but what about those, you know, who say, "Come on, but come legally"?
Yeah, of course, of course. I did. I mean, you have to pay your dues. You have to go through the whole legal experience, And so I did, you know. It's just, it would be wonderful that we have the same opportunities in different in third world countries, which, you know, I'm educating myself so I can eventually share information in my country and in different countries, you know, like educating women to become empowered, to not, you know, suffer the beating of men. So it's a lot of information we're not sharing, you know. We just, you know, it's like, don't come here or whatever. But the thing is, we only take him empty spaces. We're not taking spaces belong to anybody else. We take him empty spaces, spaces that are available, you know. That's it. I mean, we're not dominating anything. Yes, we're crossing, you know, the necessity of food and water is huge. It's just incredible, you know, the things third world country people have to go through it. And so we have to take the chance. And, you know, America is one of those wonderful countries that a lot of dreams can make it happen. But I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree that we have to go through the whole legal process and you know, and do whatever it takes to become an American.
Cesar Millan is with us. 14 years ago, he crawled into this country. Now he's got his own TV show, Dog Whisperer. Terry's calling from Gainesville, Florida. Hi, Terry. You're on the air. What do you hear?
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
We're well. What do you know, Terry?
I'm a veterinary behaviorist, and I work here in Gainesville at the University of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually on your show back in January about animal personality.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Great. It's good to hear your voice again, Terry. What do you think?
I am one of the dissenters against Cesar Millan, and I've watched his shows, and I actually use his videos to show vet students what not to do.
Well, exactly. What's your problem with it?
He doesn't seem, from what I can tell, to pay any attention to the animal's behavior whatsoever. Animal behavior is a science, Tom, based on research and a lot of information that people have gathered over the years. And animals talk in a very specific way and demonstrate their place, their motivation using their language.
But are you disputing this? The fundamental idea, as I hear it, is these are pack animals. They want to have and they respect a leader. So the human dominance is natural and welcome and settles them down, you know, lets them live a happy life. Are you don't see
that's
it that way?
A little too broad of a Band-Aid to put on a lot of these behavior problems. A dog that's anxious because there's a storm out, or a dog that has separation anxiety, which is a true veterinary pathology, this dog is not anxious because he doesn't have a leader. This dog is anxious because of true pathology, perhaps an imbalance in neurotransmitters or whatever, and it needs to be addressed as a true medical condition.
And what if you address it Cesar Millan's way? What's the problem with that?
You can actually, and what I've seen in his methods, there was one show in particular where we had a Great Dane that he taught, quote-unquote, to walk on shiny floors by basically flooding this dog, bringing the dog onto the floor, having the dog in complete panic, ears back, tail down, panting, drooling.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what he did was take this dog and put it into a state of learned helplessness, much like abused women, abused children, where he basically learned that there was no way he was going to get out of the situation. So, yes, he did walk down the hallway. But if you looked at the dog's postures, never was he calm and relaxed, and he never was happy.
Cesar, what about it? Learned helplessness as the state that you're bringing dogs to. Cesar Millan, what do you say to that?
Well, that's just her conversation. You know, that's her belief, and I.
It's not a belief. This is science, Mr. Millan.
That's fine, ma'am. I'm not just saying anything wrong about your science and your belief. I think your teaching is very valuable, and people who follow your method, I'm more power to them, you know. So I'm glad you're up there for the people, you know. This, I'm not trying to take your position or your experience or anything.
I'm looking to keep the dogs out there safe, and because in the hands of the wrong person or the wrong dog, these methods could be catastrophic.
Terry, thanks very much for your call. Cesar, what about the possibility of a dog that Terry says, you know, may actually have pathological problems that are beyond...
That's what veterinarians are for, you know. I'm not saying, you know, my style or my mm-hmm. weight is the only solution. Of course, consult a veterinarian, consult a behaviorist, consult a positive reinforcement trainer, you know. Once you're done with all that, if you still want to consult with me, I'm open to it. I'm not saying come to me first. You know, once you've done your homework and your research and your whole scientific thing, and then if you still want to come with me, go for it. Otherwise, it's nothing to be forced about, you know.
Have you ever met a dog that you couldn't deal with, whose problem
absolutely.
You couldn't solve?
Absolutely. I have met two dogs, so I did not trust for them to go back into society because they were too far gone. You know, and some cases are neurological. Some cases they definitely need, you know, medication. But most of the cases that I, you know, work with are psychological. So my style and my approach and my patience is my dedication and has worked for me, you know. And of course, like I said, you're going to have people who got to go to school and learn this, but they can't walk a pack of dogs, you know. So that's a big difference. You know, you can have a lot of knowledge book-wise. Doesn't mean you can control a pack of dogs.
Let me get one more call from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Marcia's on the line. Hi, Marcia. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. I have a Sheltie dog, and she's never given me any trouble, and I got her when she was 8 weeks. So I've had her. She's 3 years old now. And she'll only go to the bathroom in one spot in my yard, and no one else's yard. I can take her walking into town, you know, where everybody else stops and makes their mark. She won't. She'll wait till she gets home, and I've asked everyone what to do about it, and no one's ever heard of it.
And what's the problem with it, Marcia? You can't take her. You can't take her anywhere, I guess.
Right. If I take her somewhere for a couple days, she'll hold it for a couple days and wait till we get home.
Oh boy.
She gets bladder infection.
Caesar, what do you say? The only one favorite spot, and that's it. What's your advice?
Well, is it because she's not comfortable in other areas? I mean, is not relaxed? Is the mind not relaxed? The mind gets tense? The mind gets what?
No, she's relaxed at other people's houses, but she mm-hmm. wants to go home. She's more comfortable at home, and I think it's probably my fault because when she was, it only took me 3 days to housebreak her. She hasn't gone in the house since, mm-hmm. but she'll only head down the hill to the little part of the ditch, and that's where she goes. And I have a great big yard.
What do you say, Mr. Milan?
Well, some dogs become too mechanical about it, you know, and this is, that's what we need to learn about. Okay, my dog is becoming too mechanical, but it's not going to work in the long run, so I have to make sure my dog also learns that he can pee or use the bathroom in some other areas, which is very unusual, to tell you the truth. It's very unusual that a dog only choose one spot to relieve himself or to relieve themselves.
Hard to get inside the dog's mind on that one. I mean, what would you try?
Well, myself, again, all the cases that I work with, I have to see, you know, in order for me to come out with the strategy. So far, I have done 46 episodes, and every dog is a different strategy. So every dog is going to require a different way to get, you know, to get to their mind. Until you meet them, that's when you know how to do it, because they tell you exactly what they need.
Caesar Milan, he whispers to the dogs in one way or another. He hears them whisper back. Mr. Milan, I want to thank you for joining us. It's been a fascinating conversation, and good luck.
Thanks for being fair, by the way. Thanks for being fair, bringing the other side of the coin and bringing my side of the coin, I think. I hope that the people understand that my way is not the only way. There is other wonderful professional people out there. And the goal is to walk dogs every day and to have a balanced relationship with dogs and to watch the show.
Weird. Caesar Milan, The Dog Whisperer. The show is on National Geographic Channel. The book is Caesar's Way. Caesar Milan, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
And our thoughts out today to our own Jack Beatty's dog, Oscar, who passed away last night. Never fun to lose a dog. Jack, we're feeling your pain today. Listeners, thanks for joining in this hour. It's always great to have you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I wanna wear the path that's true. And I-